It's a brand new day, and a brand new year, and a brand new life for all of us. We leave the past behind, and we walk valiantly forth into a bright new day. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campbell, California, with a thought for today. Today, we're talking about happiness and joy and peace and harmony and love and goodness. And if we're talking about happiness, joy, peace, love, and goodness, happiness, joy, peace, love, and goodness should be ours. Now, is it ours?
Yes.
Is it ours?
Yes.
Have we created our world in that way?
Yes.
Well, we create our world by our thought. And we have said this again and again and again. We create our world by our thought. Now, what sort of thought are you creating your world as? Now, I was walking up the path to come from the Hermitage to the monastery this morning. And as I was walking up the path, it's quite steep, and I came up it, and I turned around and looked back, and I could see the sun popping over the top of the mountains and filling the valley a little bit, but still part of the mountain was in shade, and it was sort of quiet and peaceful. But the valley was filling up with the sun, just like it was getting its tank filled. And it was quite beautiful. And then I turned around and I looked forward again. And I was walking along and I thought, I've been approached by so many people who would like to experience wholeness and perfection. And we teach wholeness and perfection. We teach health. We teach living in our ideal spirit, mind, and body. We teach all these things. But do we demonstrate them? Well, now, if we demonstrate them, why do we take pills? If we demonstrate that, why do we need medicine? If we demonstrate that, why do we have to go to the doctor? If we demonstrate that, we demonstrate... we don't demonstrate it. We just don't. Now, what could we do to demonstrate it? Well, I was listening to stuff that you'd like to know from the internet. And in there, they were talking about how the ancient Greeks gained their early modicum of wisdom, and how they gained their early things that made them so wise. And the story is that they went over to Egypt to study, and they had Egyptian schools which were 40 years long. You would attend school for 40 years. Now that's quite amazing. But out of that came the fathers of all of the knowledge that we have today, came the mathematics, came the philosophy, came all of the things that we have taken for granted today. Now, why was it took them 40 years to study? Why did it take them so long to apply it? Well, probably because they had so many other activities going on at the same time. Quite likely, they had to have a job. Quite likely, they had to earn a living and take care of a family. Perhaps they even had a family. And they had a wife and children, and they had responsibilities, and then they were being educated. Now, today, we try to take people away from having a job, take people away from having anything that distracts them on their educational career, so that they could apply themselves 100% to their educational career. Now, we are so proud of our young men and women who get a job and put themselves through college. Well, think how much more brilliantly they could be if they could put 100% of their attention on their education rather than on earning a living to put themselves through and also paying for their education as they were doing it. Just think about it. Just think about it. If I say to you, okay, I would like you to paint me a picture. And so you say, all right, so you get the equipment and you start painting. Now you're a good painter, but the baby cries and you got to go take care of the baby because you're the only one there doing it. And so the streetcar is going by outside and the noises are going on. And so then there's a big thunderstorm and you got to close all the windows and make sure everything is secure so that the house doesn't get rained inside. And so then the lights go out because the electricity goes off. You have distractions, distractions, distractions. Now, all of these distractions keep you from producing your picture. Now, we hear about painters who are so one-pointed, they go into their garret, into their upper room, and that's wherever they can get away from the rest of the family and all other responsibility, and hole up there. They close the door. They don't have to go to the bathroom. They don't have to eat. They don't have to do anything. They just, for instance, paint. And so they paint their picture. And the picture may take a day. It may take 2 days. Maybe take three. I mean, that's pretty good. But doctors tell you that if you don't have a bowel movement for 3 days, it's not a terrible thing. It's the body can handle that quite easily, maybe even longer. And you're so accustomed to needing to go to the bathroom because it's a diversion. It's something to distract you from what you're doing. And so you go and you do that. But just think. Just think. And I'm telling you right now to just think about this. Just think if you could give by your choice, by your desire, by your eagerness, 100% of your attention to a given project, how you could accomplish that given project easily. Now, we know of a lot of painters who do watercolors and who do painting. And they're quite famous. And they do a lot of watercolors. They do a lot of painting. They don't have other people come in and do their paintings. They do it themselves. Now, what's the name of our famous painter that we enjoyed so much?
Kincaid.
Now, Kincaid is a professional man. Now, Kincaid is a professional painter. Kincaid does his work in such a beautiful way that he paints pictures that seem to move. He paints pictures that you look at it and you can swear that the river is flowing or that the clouds are moving in the sky. How does he do that? Now, it's a certain magic. Now, he has many paintings, and he has paintings that are duplicated. Now, are those duplicated paints the same paintings, the same thing? Yes. You look at the duplicated painting of a river that seems to be moving in his original painting, and on the prints, they seem to be moving too, because it is a concept that's been captured and carried on. Now, when does he have time to do all that painting? He has his commercial companies. He sells these paintings all over the world. He has these programs going on for himself, and he's quite busy and quite good. What he does whenever he paints, he goes by himself. He goes in a closed room. Or if he's among people, he pays no attention to anybody. He just does his own thing. And he does a beautiful job. Now, why is it that of all the painters who stand on the Seine or who stand on the West Bank or East Bank of the Paris, you know, and paint, why there are so few that are magnificent, so few that are beyond words, you might say? Well, because the average person who's doing this is lets himself be distracted by what's going on around him. A painter does not paint what he sees. A painter paints what he knows within himself. If you photographically would take a picture of what the painter was painting, and then you look at the picture of what the painter painted, you'd say, where did you see that? Where did you see it? You might see some similarities, but the nuances, the magic, the attitude that the painter finds and puts on his canvas is something that you didn't see because you don't have the eyes of a painter. You don't have the eyes of one-pointedness. Okay. In the early years, education had many things, and people would go from Greece down to Egypt to study for 40 years. Now, where did they learn about that? Interesting. How many of their parents were willing to give them up for 40 years from wherever they started? And did they go home and visit their parents in between time, you know? And it takes several weeks to take a ship voyage, you know, and to go to Greece, to Egypt and things like that. Now, why is it that we are not able to accomplish the great things that we accomplish? I would imagine if we were able to look into the life of just Bill Gates or Stephen Jobs, two of the wealthiest men in the world, if you were able to look into their lives, you would see people who very one-pointedly work on whatever they're doing. And they're very emotional. They're very emotional on what they do. They're so intense. In fact, this is a word that is used for Bill Gates very often. That he's very intense. And other people who are not so kind would say that he was angry and that he was upset and that he was irrational. That'd be a word that they'd like to use. But a kinder word is that he's intense. You see? Now, irrational is perhaps the more proper word. Can you be irrational about your healing? Can you be irrational about your life? Can you be irrational about what is important for you in this world? And to be irrational means that beyond looking at appearances, you see past that to the truth. You see whatever is the reality. You see a broken leg and you say, my God, that leg is going to be broken forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. It'll never be healed. Well, now, you don't say that. Because you know that with time and with the normal healing of the body, the leg will heal again and you can walk on it again if it's been properly set and things like that. Now, you see, that's okay. But the artist, the Gates, the geniuses of the world see it done now. They see it done now. When he is working on his software program, he is not thinking of his software program as to be. You understand that? His software program is done. He is merely putting it down on paper. He knows where he's going. He knows that the healing is already done. He knows that leg is whole and perfect right now. That bone is set perfectly right now. And that he knows where he's going. And he is so one-pointed. He is so irrational. He is so intense. Now, you say, boy, I'd like to be able to do beautiful things like that for myself, you know, heal my body and heal my mind and heal myself. Well, no, you wouldn't, because you don't have the intensity that the genius has. The intensity is something that you can develop it. Some people, fortunately, are born with it, or at least they develop it early on. But you can develop it. You can create yourself so intensely interested in whatever you're doing so intensely interested in what, when Jesus said, pick up your bed and walk, he wasn't meaning it's going to take 10 minutes for you to do that now. He didn't say that it's going to take 12 years for the healing to take place. He said, now, now. He taught the now. And our great artists, our great teachers, our great philosophers, our great beings who live in the now are doing beautiful things. And we admire them. Oh, we say how wonderful they are. Wow, would I love to be like that? No, you wouldn't. For if you'd love to be like that, you have to learn to be intense. You have to learn to be so, I don't want to say the word like this, but so violently into whatever you're doing that you will not allow yourself to be shaken by anything else. You will not allow yourself to be shaken by appearances or by what the doctor says. You, and I keep telling people, the doctors are great guys. They do a great work. And the doctor is more of a metaphysician than the metaphysicians are. Because the doctors look at what you say you want, and then the doctors say, that's what you're going to get. You say you want to be sick, because you keep saying, I'm sick, I hurt, I got this here. And the doctor says, okay, now if you keep on that level, you're going to die. If you keep on that level, you're going to bring it back again. The cancer can be cut out of your body, but if you're going to rethink the same thoughts that put it there the first time, you're going to bring it back another way, you know, and perhaps even worse, because much of your immune system has been damaged in the process of taking it out. Well, now, we don't need to go through all that nonsense. We don't need to go through all that nonsense. It's done unto you according to your belief. Now, we believe that. We believe that. And do you believe that? Do you really believe it? Do you believe that your word is your bond? No, you don't, because you lie all the time. You lie all the time. You lie, you say, oh, I know why that is. Well, tell us why that is. Well, I can't tell you why that is, because I will give it power. And well, then why did you mention that you can tell us why that is if you don't intend to tell us why that is, because you didn't really know why it was in the first place? So don't do that. Don't lie to yourself. And the more you lie to yourself, the harder it's going to be for you to stand up for principle. Now, when you tell little children that this is how things should be done, and then you live your life to the contrary, then they develop the bad habits of lying too. And you all know little white lies. You know, you all know little white lies, and they're not terrible. They're not bad. Yes, they are. A little white lie is just as bad as the most terrible lie that could ever be told, because it's a lie. And so anytime we lie, anytime we prevaricate, anytime we speak something which is not true, then we have opened ourselves up for having a rotten life. Now, you say, well, how do we put a new cause in motion? How do we change? How do we begin developing? Well, you go to Egypt for the 40-year program. Oh my God, who wants to spend 40 years going to school? Well, you're going to school every day of your life. You're going to the school called the School of Application. You are applying what you believe and what you know. Now, what do you believe and what do you know? What do you believe and what do you know? We saw Penelope, I believe that was the name of the movie last night, and in the movie, the girl had a snout that was like a pig, and it was supposed to be a curse that came from some ancient times, and so she lived with this curse. It bothered her parents more than it did her. Now, let me tell you this. If Penelope lived in a world without a mirror, and she never saw herself with that nose, would she ever dislike herself? Mm-hmm. Now, if other people came up to her and they liked her for whom she was, oh, they get over the shock. You get over the shock of a person's broken leg. You get over a shock of a person's body that's misshapen in some way. And after a while, poof, you don't think a thing about it. Now, yeah, it's up to us to begin to realize that we are the creators of our world more than we want to take credit for. And this new year, let's put a cause in motion that this is our New Year's resolution. I'm going to be myself and have fun. And that's what it's all about. I don't have to know all the knowledge of the universe, which I do know. I don't have to be the respected, responded to person in the universe that everybody thinks is so wonderful. No. Do I think I'm wonderful? Do I really believe in myself? Do I really think that I'm a great person? If I do, that's all that matters. And do you think the rest of the world will see me just the way I see me? Oh, yes. The rest of the world will see me just the way I see. Now, do I see me whole and perfect? Do I spend time walking the path here saying, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect? Well, is my body pretty good? Am I pretty good? Am I pretty whole and perfect? A few little areas I'm working on yet, but I'm pretty good, I'm whole and perfect, you know? And I'm doing just fine. And every day I feel better and better. Every day I walk and I talk and I dance and I sing and I play and I talk to people and I act like a young spring chicken, you know. And this is the way to do it. This is the way to do it. Now, this is not something that I do temporarily or I do occasionally or I do just because I think of it. This is something I'm programming into myself. Now, whenever anything goes wrong, it's because I didn't keep my mind one-pointed on what I'm doing. If I am an artist, if I am a painter, and I'm painting a picture of a scenery here, and Ellen comes up to me and she says, Herb, and I'm not hearing Ellen, and I'm painting away there, and I'm just in this heaven of painting, and Ellen comes up and shakes my shoulder, says, Herb, I want to talk to you. And so she bumps my shoulders while I'm painting, and so I make a schmoosh on my painting with my brush. And I stop painting, and I don't get angry about it, because I can unschmoosh that easily, you know. And so I just turn to her and I say, yes, what is it you want? Herb, there's a rattlesnake laying at your foot, and I thought you should know about it. You know, well, thank you very much. Hi, rattlesnake, go away and play somewhere, you know. And the rattlesnake says, no, I like to be in your vibrations. You know, but you see, people will want to disturb us for any reason at all while we're doing our masterpieces. And anytime you are alive, anytime you're living in a human body and you're alive, you are doing your masterpiece. Your masterpiece is what is going on in your mind, in your heart. Do you like yourself? Do you like yourself? Do you say, I'm a happy person? Do you say, everything is in divine order? Do you say, I like me, I like me, I like me? I'm whole and perfect. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. I like me, you know. I'm being myself and having fun. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. And then somebody bumps you while you're in the process of being yourself. Hey, what do you want, you know? You know? And then you go back to what you're doing, and they smushed your painting because they hit your arm and you knocked your paintbrush on your beautiful landscape that you're painting, and you say, maybe that should take a little different swirl, a little different thing. And when you return to where your intention is, where your intensity is, when you return to it, then you return perhaps with a new point of view. But you're not angry, because if you're angry, your anger would come through on your painting.